It's A Couple Cooks, the podcast with Sonia and Alex Overheiser. We're a couple on a mission to find the tastiest, good-for-you eats you can make in your kitchen. Because the way we eat can make a meaningful difference.
Join us as we chase after real good food through stories, recipes, and conversations about cooking at home and eating well. Welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're glad you're here. Before we get to this week's episode, we wanted to take just a minute and say that we were, along with many of you, shocked and horrified by the events in Charlottesville this past weekend. It's terribly sad to see this uptick in hate groups, an uptick in white supremacy, and it's a society that we feel like should be moving forward, sometimes feels like it's going backwards 50 years. And we just want you to know that we are standing with you, we love you, and thank you for listening. Later in this episode, Sonia sits down with Catherine McCord of the website Wealicious. She's a cookbook author and someone who loves to cook for her family. And so we decided, let's just take a few minutes and talk about what it means to cook for a family, whether your family is you and a roommate, you and your dog, or you and your seven kids. There's some tricks to cooking for all those people.
That's right, because if I were just cooking for myself, I'd probably just make a quesadilla every day.
You'd put lots and lots of vegetables in there.
Right, but there is something unique about feeding multiple people and not just yourself when you're trying to cook for people who have different tastes, who have different dietary preferences, and it takes a lot of creativity. It's something that doesn't come natural to a lot of people, myself included, and we've learned a lot along the way in the past 10 years as we've had our journey in the kitchen. We've learned a lot about how to feed lots of people.
Right. And there's a lot of ways to do this. I know one way is just to try to find that perfect recipe that pleases all the dietary guests. You find the person who doesn't like mushrooms, the person who doesn't like meat, the gluten-free, the sugar-free, all of those things. And you come up with like a carrot that's roasted. Or some other perfect recipe out there that I'm not aware of. Or you have some other methods for us.
I do. So one method that we like to use is to have a meal that has all sorts of different dishes that all combine well. And each one has one or more dietary preferences or food preferences. For example, my parents came to visit this weekend, and we had some voracious meat eaters. We had me, who generally eats vegetarian, and then Alex, who eats all things.
The flexitarian.
Yes. And there are also some specific preferences against garlic and cilantro, which is in almost everything we make. So it was a challenge to try to think about, okay, what do we want to serve for dinner? And what we ended up with was we did some grilled shrimp as our entree, and each person could eat that if they wanted or take as much as they wanted. And then we had several different side dishes that all complemented the shrimp. Specifically, we had a lentil and rice salad that was kind of a summer mixture with tomatoes from our garden and basil from our garden and a smoky paprika vinaigrette. And that was kind of the basis for my meal. It was something that could give me enough protein and fillingness as a vegetarian. And then we had a few other side salads, like a Greek salad and some grilled vegetables. And so each person could kind of take what they wanted from each one of those dishes and create the meal that they were looking for.
And there's a few things that make that type of meal a success. One, your family is great at enjoying a happy hour. And so we had some cheese and crackers, I think, and maybe a few other snacks beforehand. And so nobody was going in starving and needing a giant entree in the first place. And two, a lot of the ingredients were shared across dishes. So if you cut an onion for the salad, you might throw it into the lentils as well, and then also grill some. So you get three different flavors from cutting a single vegetable, which can really save some time if you just get creative and figure out different ways to appreciate the ingredients and pull out some flavors.
Now, my other method is similar, but it is picking a main dish course that actually can be flexible and customizable to lots of different dietary preferences. So my example is a taco that we just created. It's a refried bean taco with a bunch of vegetables and then a chipotle cashew cream on top. So it's actually a vegan taco. And if you wanted to serve it to a bunch of different eaters, you can create different toppings, like maybe a grilled shrimp for meat eaters. You could do some chicken. You could do the refried beans. You could do scrambled eggs, all different types of toppings. And that can allow people to kind of create their own creation.
And if you have like gluten-free people, you can do wheat tortillas and corn tortillas, or even just a lettuce salad bowl for somebody doing some sort of crazy Whole 30 thing.
Exactly. So there's lots of types of meals that work this way. You could do a burrito bowl, kind of what Alex was alluding to. You could do a chili that's vegetarian, and then you add the meat on top, so you just keep it separate. All sorts of different ways to eat the same main dish, but be able to customize it as well.
You can find the link for that refried bean taco. It's right on our website, acouplecooks.com, and we'll also share it in the show notes. And I think we have a grilled shrimp over in the archive somewhere. We'll share a link to that as well.
We do, and I am working on that lentil and rice summer salad. I believe we'll be posting it sometime in the next week, so I will put a link to that as well. All right, let's get to that interview. Catherine McCord is the creator of Wheelicious, a website with hundreds of recipes. She's also author of 2 cookbooks. She joined us today to tell us more about her story with food and to talk about how to feed a family. Here she is. Catherine McCord, welcome to the A Couple Cooks podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's go back a few years. You started your career in modeling, and then you moved to entertainment, where you were co-host of MTV's Loveline TV show from back in the day. And then somehow you ended up in culinary school in New York. So I wanted to first dig into that. What's the backstory there?
Doesn't it sound like the most natural progression? The most naturally odd progression. So I started modeling when I was 13. And so I, you know, really had the opportunity to travel all over the world, getting to see different countries, the way different people live, the way they ate. So I was modeling, and I started acting and hosting a bunch of TV shows. And then I lived blocks from the World Trade Center. And so on 9/11, it was this epiphany for me that I needed to get on with what I really wanted to do with my life. And my grandparents were very into farming and growing their own food. So that was a big part of me and what was important to me. And always when I traveled, just looking at the way that families ate and why did some people love certain foods and hate other kinds. So I ended up going to the Institute of Culinary Education in New York and then working in restaurants and catering companies trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And then I had this little guy and this little boy and, you know, had no idea what to feed a baby. I could cook for an adult and cook a pretty mean meal for an adult. But when it came to kids, I was like totally stumped. And that's when and why I started Wheelicious.
Wow, that's a crazy story. I want to go back just a little bit. So you talk about kind of 9/11 making you think about what was important to you. Was there something about modeling and entertainment that wasn't fulfilling at the time?
I just had been doing it for so many years. And I mean, look, I'm grateful for modeling because I got to save my, you know, all of my money and, you know, so that I could really focus what I wanted on what I wanted to do. But it never felt very fulfilling to me. And I wanted to use this other part of my brain that at least at that time, you know, I wasn't getting to do as much.
Tell me about culinary school. I know you traveled a ton. You were exposed to so many things. Then when you hit culinary school, what are some of the things that kind of opened your mind in culinary school and about that approach to food?
Well, at culinary school, one of our best friends is like a world famous chef, let's say, and Dan Barber. So he has
is really funny. I just watched the Chef's Table episode with Dan Barber last night.
Oh, he's the best. He's my kid's godfather. And
really? So wow.
He was an amazing sounding board for me because, you know, he had said, like, you can just go get a restaurant job. You know what I mean? You can go stage for anyone for free. But there was just this part of me that really wanted that, like, old school culinary education. I wanted to know how to do everything from fillet a fish to make a, you know, beef bourguignon. I just wanted to like have it all. So culinary school for me was one of the greatest experiences of my life because I had started modeling so young. I had lost a lot of that like kind of college experience. And randomly there were 14 girls and one boy in my culinary class. And it was like being in one big cooking sorority.
So then you graduate from culinary school and you have Dan Barber as this kind of mentor. Did you think about then going into the restaurant business?
Again, like the restaurant, when I graduated, that didn't really, working in a restaurant, I mean, kudos to the restaurant industry. It is such a tough business. The hours are grueling. I knew I wanted to have children, so I didn't think that was really going to be hand in hand with that lifestyle. So, I mean, it was weird because, you know, blogging was like this very, it was 10 years ago. So there weren't a lot of, there was like Elise from Simply Recipes, Reed Drummond. There were a few really awesome bloggers, but not that many. That I kind of dove in and I used Waylicious it was like free for many years. I didn't take advertising. I didn't do any ads. And then I realized I was really working like 60-hour weeks, even though I did get to stay home with my son. So that was the fun part. But, blogging is an awesome job and I feel really grateful that it opened the doors to get to do all these things that I, you know, really love doing.
Right. So now you've created hundreds and hundreds of recipes on your website. In terms of blogging and being a blogger, you get to interact and connect with so many people all over the world and really help to resource them on how to feed their families. And that's such a unique career that has really only taken shape within the past maybe 5 or so years.
Yeah. I mean, it's super, it was a very unusual, unique path, but the best part about it, especially when I started and still I get to communicate with people all over the world. And it's Waylicious has been really the path of myself and raising my three children, and how different their eating, their passions for food are, get to learn through them and what it really means to, you know, be one family, one meal.
So you grew up in kind of the 80s, 90s, as did I. And I'm wondering kind of what was your relationship to food back then, especially maybe as a model? And how is that similar or different to the way that you teach your kids about food?
It's really funny. I mean, I grew up, so you exactly what you just said. Like I grew up stuck between sugar snap peas and fresh blueberries and tomatoes growing out of a compost in my grandparents' yard to McDonald's and, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And so it was like, and like TV meals when my parents went out and was like, oh my God, I have to eat fish sticks out of like a silver box. Ew. It's like, I mean, I've always, like my grandparents just impressed on me what a real tomato tastes like. So that's always, you know, I feel like part of my search, my quest of food has always been what is the perfect apricot taste like? What is, you know, really amazing bacon taste like? So, you know, that's why even my cooking and Waylicious is just about like super simple, easy recipes, but just the best quality ingredients you can possibly get.
Absolutely. And you talk about kind of the different approaches to food of each of your children. How is that? How do you manage that being a mom of having three children with three very different palates probably and personalities? How do you model how to eat for each one of them?
Well, I mean, to start, my son became a vegetarian when he was 6. He's 10 now. So that was like within itself, he was like 6 and a half. That was a learning curve. So my daughter is like a massive carnivore. My son's a vegetarian. Gemma's 2 years old. My husband eats vegan before 6 and I eat everything. So it's like, but somehow I'm like not a short order cook. Everybody eats just about the same thing. And I just, you know, try to roll with it. And I've, you know, I've always taught the kids, like, you know, we go out to the garden and, you know, even if we don't have a bunch of things growing, just like, what does basil taste like? And what can we go cook with it? What can we do with it? And just teaching, you know, going to the farmer's market on Sundays, every Sunday we go, and going to the grocery and letting them pick one or two things, just, you know, impressing on them that what food does in our bodies and how it helps our machine run. And, you know, they've just been amazing. They go through stages, and I'm very, like, vocal about those stages. But, you know, I don't want, you know, my kids are amazing eaters, but, you know, no one's quote unquote perfect and eats absolutely everything. We all have preferences.
How do you manage that? I hear from a lot of parents who say that my kid doesn't eat this and that and whatever. And, you talk about stages. Is it something you view as, okay, right now they don't like pears and they might like it in another month or two?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm like shocked at, like, you know, when I try like time after time after time for a food, and then like all of a sudden it becomes the favorite food, like overnight. So I've always like ignored putting weight on something, like, you don't like this, or, you know, or I don't like this, you don't like this. It's so funny. One of the guys that I work with who shoots video for me, when he started working here almost 10 years ago, he like hated everything because his dad said to him, I don't like this, so you don't like this. Mm-hmm. So he never like tried, like, until he had come here, started working here, he, asparagus, like, he had never tasted asparagus because he assumed he didn't like it. And I just always think it's really funny to see how people, you know, it's modeling is everything as a parent, you know, in everything we do, but especially with food, because kids just like, all they're doing is watching us. And if we say, oh, I don't like salad, well, of course they're going to be like, well, I don't like salad too.
Yeah. I had the same thing with my father growing up. He was deathly terrified of Brussels sprouts. And I just grew up thinking like Brussels sprouts are bad, you know? And then I grow up and I find Brussels sprouts at our farmer's market and I try them roasted and they're one of my favorite things ever. But it took me until I was in my mid 20s to be able to get out of that thinking.
That's amazing. I love that story.
So I guess your message then is to kind of view everything as a phase and to, I guess, continue introducing these foods, even if your child doesn't like it on Monday, maybe try it again on Sunday and see if it sticks.
100%. Or like change the way that you, like you said, Brussels sprouts. So like maybe you don't like them, you know, steamed, and you've tried it like shaved into a salad, but all of a sudden you roast them with olive oil and salt and they're like a favorite food. So sometimes we, you know, we try to transform as well.
I like that. Have you read the book French Kids Eat Everything?
I have. I love that book.
Okay, good. Me too. And I remember reading a passage where she talks about needing to introduce a new food or flavor 7 times for a child in order to get them to kind of accept it. Do you find that to be true in practice with your own children?
I think that it can, not always, but I think it can take certain kids that many times to start loving a food. Absolutely. I mean, definitely a few foods, you know. I mean, like, look, my son never liked meat, the texture, everything, but I always tried. And he eventually, like, got to it, you know, but was okay with it. But it took a long time to get there. And then, of course, he was like, I'm never eating meat again. But you'll see that with like broccoli and, you know, like kids, I don't want broccoli. And so like, I'll say like maybe sprinkle a little salt or a squeeze of lemon or a shot of Bragg's or, you know, anything to just sort of like amp it up a little bit.
I like that idea of just being creative and staying with it, kind of having grit to keep trying, keep innovating. And I think that's one place where as a home cook, people can become frustrated, you know, and I think it's important to have a community of other people who are trying the same things. And so you can kind of float it past them and say, I tried this, I tried that. What do you think? And that can kind of help your creative juices to flow with the way that you're presenting food to your children.
100%.
So you have quite a bit of recipes on your website. And one thing I like to ask recipe developers, cookbook authors is where should we start? What's one recipe or two or three? Because I know it's hard to choose, but what is one you would recommend? Here's a good recipe to start with from my website or from one of my cookbooks.
Oh my God, this is like the most torturous question.
I know, I'm so sorry. It's kind of like saying, who's your favorite child and why?
I mean, it's all like for breakfast. I mean, I do something called the Smoothie Project. So my son got very sick about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. So in trying to discover what was going on with his nausea, headaches, stomach aches, I started giving him smoothies every day. And within 2 weeks, and since then, he's felt great. And I truly believe like smoothies. So if you want to, smoothies are definitely a good place to come to Wealicious for. I would say for dinner time. Oh my gosh, this is so hard. I have like a broiled salmon with a summer salsa on it. Mm. So broiled salmon is just like, it's so simple. It's so easy. And people always ask me about it. So it's just a whole piece of broiled salmon. No work chicken is like my lazy girl's version a simple chicken recipe. Sushi rolls, like for school lunch, just to like really transform the way that you eat a sandwich. I mean, Wealicious is like just that place that you're like, here's my simple ingredient. Now I just want to make something with it that's really easy and healthy.
And when you're cooking for people with so many different preferences, your son being vegetarian, when you serve your salmon, that sounds so incredible. What else do you serve along with it to make sure that he is getting a filling vegetarian meal?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because that to make sure, like, so that one, that salmon has this like amazing summer salsa. It's like fruits and cucumbers and avocado and all this stuff. So I'll give that to him on the side. I always serve some kind of like potato, like some starch, you know, quinoa, whatever, rice, potato. And then I'll ask him if I'm not serving enough like protein in a meal, you know, besides the like salmon chicken. Sometimes I'll make him a fried egg, or he loves baked tofu, or, you know, sometimes he's like, I just take two slices of cheese, you know, it's actually quite easy, you know, a cup of yogurt, handful of almonds, that's fine. And he like eats tons of everything else I make.
Got it. Yeah. I like that type of meal where there's a lot of options and then each person can kind of fix their plate based on their own preferences.
Exactly.
So I wanted to ask a little bit, there's in our country right now, there's kind of a lack of education on nutrition and cooking for children. And I'm wondering if you have ideas on how we close that gap as a nation, whether it's in schools, whether it's through websites and businesses and advocates for cooking education. How do you think we should close the gap?
I mean, I wish that I could say it's at home, but, you know, but generationally, I think that, you know, we don't all live in places where, you know, we weren't necessarily educated. So I think that, you know, schools, I wish it was easier. I think that school is an amazing place to learn, obviously. So I think that, you know, food education can and should be part of it. And I'm always really hoping that schools take a bigger part in that. You know, I think it's everyone and everything. I think that we're seeing a lot more responsibility from restaurants and food companies removing the GMOs and food dyes and so on and so forth. We're seeing more organic food. And, you know, every little bit counts. I mean, you know, like my feeling is also that if you spend a little bit more money in the house on fruits, vegetables, like nutritious foods, you're going to also see a lot less bills when it comes to the health care that your family is receiving. You know, you just don't go to the doctor as much when you're eating really good quality, you know, nutritious food.
And you've seen that in your son's life very specifically.
100%. I mean, it fascinates me. I mean, like, knock on wood, there's no like bragging rights here. Like, our family just doesn't get sick very often. And I always attribute it to certain foods that the kids eat.
Alex and I have had kind of the same thing in our life that, not that we were terribly sickly before we started changing the way we ate, but we've found we barely get sick during cold season usually. And, I used to have stomach aches all the time and I don't as much anymore. And we just feel like we have more energy and, there's so much to be said about, the way you eat affecting the way you feel.
It's amazing. It really is amazing. Yeah. I mean, like we take bee pollen every day. People are always like, well, what's bee pollen? I'm like, it's an immunity booster. It's high in protein. It's great for seasonal allergies, you know, and they're like, where do you find it? Like, I just feel like, you know, the more that you like educate and introduce one or two new foods every month into your regular diet, like it just all of a sudden, you like when you feel better, you're all of a sudden like, oh my God, this is the epiphany. Like, I feel good. I look good. And, you know, I can do this and I enjoy this.
I'm going to switch gears a little to a more personal question related to our son, Larson, who is 6 months old. We just started feeding him vegetable purees at 5 months, which was earlier than I expected. I wasn't quite ready for him to not be a baby anymore. So he's got his high chair and he's eating his purees and loving them. What do I have to expect? I'm kind of the type of parent who just discovers things as I go. So what do I have to expect over the next maybe year or so trying to educate Larson about foods?
Oh, it's so exciting. Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think that the rules have changed. I think that like 20 years ago, there was like this rule about the way you fed your baby and like they have to have, you know, a bottle of milk every day and they should only eat baby food. And, you know, this the science has really changed. I think that, you know, once you I always go by the, you know, the 3-day weight rule. You want to try a few different foods. Yeah, I mean, the same food a few days in a row just to make sure your baby doesn't have any allergies. But then, like, your baby can, like, start eating what you're eating. And I think that especially it sounds like he's, you know, because he wants to eat, like, now. Like, Gemma didn't start till she was, like, gosh, 8-9 months old. She just was like, yeah, I got nursing down, you know, not so interested in the rest of it. It's okay. And that's great too. You know, she had a bunch of food allergies, which was interesting. So I think that like the more that you can show your baby how much you love certain foods, even that, I mean, this is like the time that they're just all, they have nothing, no, they don't have a computer or a phone. They're not, all they want to do is watch you. So this is like that really amazing imprint time.
And when do I start introducing things that are other than purees?
You probably want to start introducing things other than purees when Larson's ready. I think that you'll know, like small little bites of anything that you're eating, just as long as they're like appropriate for, you know, the way that he's chewing, how many teeth in his mouth. But I mean, I've seen babies that are over 12 months who can gum some meat and get it down. So, yeah, I mean, as soon as he's like, rolled through a bunch of different purees. Like Gemma started drinking our smoothies every morning when she was 10 months old through a straw, which is also a great way for like oral strength, for getting, you know, little ones who are going to start talking. So, you know, straws are always great too at a young age.
Good to know. So I will check out your smoothie project for sure in a few months once Larson's ready to start going down that road. All right, let's talk a little bit about your books. You have two of them.
Yes. Yeah, so I've got Wheelicious, One Family, One Meal, and Wheelicious Lunches. And they're just packed with super simple, healthy, fun recipes. Wheelicious Lunches is really, it's for everyone. I mean, I've had people be like, I made my kids lunch and I want to eat it. So I think that it's a lot of ideas for all age groups. But it is focused on school age kids because, you know, that's the time when you're like, I can make my own lunch, but I don't know what to feed my kids. So especially as we're heading back to school now, it's a great cookbook. Even hand your kids and say, here's a bunch of little tabs. Go through every page. Show me what you want to eat. And that way it takes the guessing game out of what to make for lunch.
Well, I love that. Larson can't really weigh in yet, but I've done that with my niece and nephew, and it's been really fun to kind of collaborate with them on the way we're eating instead of just saying, here it is, and that's what we're doing. Just kind of getting ideas and seeing what kind of creative ideas they have for what they want to eat as well.
So sweet. It just makes it so much more fun. And then you don't get stuck in the like lunch rut.
All right. Well, Catherine, it's been so wonderful chatting with you today. Where can people follow along with you?
You can follow along on Instagram, Twitter, everywhere at Wheelicious, and also my organic family-friendly meal company, One Potato, which is One Potato Box, everything social.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Too funny that we were just watching Chef's Table. We're a little behind and are catching up on this great Netflix documentary series, and Dan Barber comes up in this interview.
Yeah, we're having so much fun watching it. If you haven't seen it, it's this really wonderful and beautiful storytelling of some of the world's greatest chefs. And for some reason at first we weren't drawn to the idea of it, but once we started watching, we got pretty into it.
We're just a couple episodes in, but you go from the Parmesan region of Italy to Argentina to New York, just discovering these great creative minds and seeing the kind of drive that it takes to build something brilliant.
In the interview, Catherine talked about her books, which I will place the links to both of those in the show notes. She also talked about her business, One Potato, which delivers organic meal kits to families to help around dinner time. And she offered us a special code for listeners to get $25 off. It is couples25. So if you go to onepotato.com and enter couples, couples25, you can get $25 off your order.
And they focus on West Coast, is that right?
They do. There are 8 states in the West Coast, so check the show notes to see if you are one of those states.
That is our show for today. Let us know what you're cooking for your family.
Or your roommates, or your friends, or your parents.
I would argue that your roommates and friends are your family.
Okay. Or your baby.
Or your children.
Or your toddlers.
Or your spouse.
Your teenagers.
All of those people. What are you cooking? Head over to acouplecooks.com, acouplecookspodcast.com, on Instagram or Twitter @acouplecooks. You can find us everywhere online.
Talk to you next time.